Hello, Dale speaking. This is India.
Dale speaking. This is Rue.
Dale speaking. This is Amber.
Ring, ring. Dale speaking.
They've hit rock bottom with their new single. It's all over. They've stabbed themselves in the foot.
And now they have dirty sheets. Welcome to Radio Dale number 47.
This week in music history, 3 days in a row from 1990. Mm.
This week on the charts, Eminem and Not the Candy.
We have music from The Attacks, who have hit rock bottom. Or have they?
And in part two, Rue's interview with Travis Morrison of Shoutable.
Very good. You pronounce it without the E.
Yes, it is.
Shoutable.
Shoutable. Hey, everybody. Welcome to This Week in Music History. Whoa.
You're
what was that for? Why not?
Because usually we f*** around a little more until we start.
I'm sorry.
I was just amazed.
Welcome to this. Welcome to This Week in Music History. I'm just totally thrown off.
Okay. We are doing music history.
Yes.
Do we need to intro anything? No. Welcome. No. Let's jump into it.
Let's jump in right now. On November 14th, 1990, record producer Frank Farian fired Milli Vanilli, singers Rob Pilatus and Fabrice, a.k.a. Fab, Morvan, because they were insisting on singing on their new album. So sad. I remember when they were huge. Before.
Well, funny enough, November 15th, 1990, so the next day.
Next day.
Milli Vanilli producer Frank Farian held a press conference. And funny enough, on the next day, November 15th, 1990, Milli Vanilli producer Frank Farian held a press conference to confirm the rumors that the two members of the group, Rob and Fab, had not sung on any of their hit records.
Girl, you know it's false.
Zing.
You did the same thing.
November 16th, 1990. The next day again.
Yay.
The number one song in Canada was Suicide Blonde by INXS.
So, the 14th, 15th, and 16th of November.
We're very,
1990.
Very exciting.
Yeah, but there's more. But wait, there's more. November 17th, 1996. It's still the 90s.
Six years later.
The Spice Girls were at number one on the UK album charts with their debut release, aptly called Spice Girls. Five singles were released from the album, Wannabe, Say You'll Be There, To Become One, Who Do You Think You Are, and Mama. I know two of those.
I can sing them all for you.
Please don't.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Actually, I think I only know one.
If you want to be my lover.
Just say you'll be there.
Oh, right, yeah.
And then,
what is wannabe?
To become. Wannabe.
If you want to be my lover.
Oh, sorry, that's the lover. I would have called that song.
And then, swing it, shake it, make it, who do you think you are?
I don't know that one at all.
And then, I'm not singing Mama because that's really high and I can't sing.
Which Spice Girl were you?
I loved Sporty Spice. I wasn't her, but.
You liked her? But she was sporty? Yeah. You were a Ginger fan?
I didn't like them. I didn't do
that.
Where did you get Ginger?
It was the first one. Because I was going to say Baby. I'm like, that could be weird. You like babies. Anyways, moving on. The first single, Wannabe, went to number one in 31 countries. The next two singles, Say You'll Be There and Two Became One, topped the charts in 53 countries. Very good. Way to go. Speech A Girls.
November 18th, 1974, Genesis released the double concept album, The Land Lies Down on Broadway, their sixth studio album, and the last album by the group to feature the involvement of lead singer Peter Gabriel.
Peter Gabriel, who then went on to do his own thing.
Bring in Phil Collins.
They brought in Phil Collins to drum and sing.
All right. November 19th, 1988, Bon Jovi started a two-week run at number one on the U.S. singles chart with the lead single from the band's New Jersey album, Bad Medicine.
Whoa,
you're my
bad
medicine is what I need. Oh,
there we go.
Bad medicine.
It's clear there's only one Bon Jovi fan at this table right now.
Were you even born when this came out?
No.
I was. It was two.
I wasn't.
Anyway, became the group's third number one hit and was 17 in the UK.
Not so good in the UK.
Not so good. But are they really singing to a UK audience with their Living on the Prayers and such? November 20th, 2007. Radiohead frontman Tom York admitted he was among the thousands of people who paid nothing to download the band's latest album In Rainbows. Speaking to BBC Six's Music's Steve Lomack, York said, "There wasn't any point. I just moved some money from one pocket to the other." According to one survey, 3 in 5 people paid nothing for it. York added that no one was allowed to have copies of the master recording in case it was leaked beforehand. So it went free to people, but everybody had to go through the site to get it. And I remember doing it, and I also remember not paying either.
But the people who did pay, it actually averaged out that they made more per download than if it had been just released for 99 cents. Like, I think the average actually was like $2.26 per
Something
song.
Something crazy like
because
that.
Of the people who were willing to pay more.
People would pay like $50 for it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And other people got it for zero. So an example of how pay what you want does work if you're already one of the world's biggest bands.
So get on that.
Get on the biggest band world thing.
And that was This Week in Music History. Have
a
musically historical
week.
Historical.
Could be
either. Oh, shit, historical.
So this week on the charts. In 3, 2, 1, go.
This week on the charts, we're going to take a look at Eminem and his album sales. In the U.S., Eminem released, in the world, or North America, Eminem released his new album last week. I believe it is called the Marshall Mathers LP 2. In the U.S., first week sales, 792,000 albums sold, putting it at number one on the top 200 albums. In Canada, first week sales, 103,000, putting it at number two, only to be beat out by Celine Dion. Go Canada. To give you a perspective where with how well the album has sold in the U.S. and Canada, I want to give you how well it's doing on Canadian radio and U.S. radio. So the current single, Monster, which is Eminem and Rihanna, on CHR Radio in Canada, it's at number 13. At Hot AC Radio in Canada, it just entered the chart at number 47. In the US, on the CHR chart, the single is at number 16. And on the Rhythmic chart, it is at number 7. So that kind of gives you an idea that, you know, you can have a number one album or a top-selling album, but your single doesn't necessarily have to be a number one. It can actually just be moving up the charts now. And I think a lot of the album sales are going to have to do with how well the single does now, because all of those numbers are an increase from last week. Some tidbits about this. In the US, this album is the second largest sales week of the year, only to be held by Justin Timberlake, with him having the biggest week, which was with his album, The 2020 Experience. It was number one with 968,000 albums sold in March. So this album from Eminem logs the sixth biggest sales week of the past 5 years. Since November of 2008, the only larger weeks were earned by Taylor Swift's Red, with 1.2 million in its debut in 2012. Lady Gaga's Born This Way, 1.1 million sold in 2011. Taylor Swift's Speak Now, 1 million sold in 2010. Again, these are all first week sales. Justin Timberlake and Lil Wayne's The Carter 4, 964,000 in 2011. So again, all first week sales, and kind of puts that into perspective for you. And thank you to Billboard for all of this really cool information. They had an article about this album. This album also is Eminem's 7th number one album, all consecutive and all debuts at number one. His only album to miss the top slot was his first release in 1999, the Slim Shady LP. It debuted at number two. I am curious to know what would have beaten it out, but again, it is his first album. This is a larger debut than Eminem's last album in 2010, Recovery. It started with 741,000 sold in the first week. So that kind of gives you, once again, I think we had spoken in another podcast about how, you know, people are always saying album sales are dying. But here's another example of an album that does better now compared to before in its first week of sales. So that just gives you an idea of how well Eminem is doing in the U.S. and Canada. I was amazed to see those numbers, especially with how much promo had gone into Katy Perry's recent album Prism, and I had done a podcast segment on that recently, and the album sales for that were, I believe, only 130,000 in the US, and here we are with 792 for Eminem. So figure that one out. So that's it for this week on the charts. This week we have a brand new single from a band that we have been working with for a little while now. The band is The Attacks, and they are Danish, and they're actually going to be in Ontario, Canada. They're going to be touring Canada very soon, actually starting this Friday with The Reason. They're going to be playing in Ontario, Saskatchewan, Alberta, Manitoba, and we're very excited about seeing those two bands together. But like I said, The Attacks, this is their new single. The first single, Stab, did very well at Canadian radio, and we're super excited about this one. So here you have it, The Attacks, Rock Bottom on Radio Day.
This week for part two of the show, I had a chance to talk over Skype with one of the two Travises, Travis Morrison, involved in the creation of Shoutable. Now, if you hear, I pronounced it without an E, Shoutable. Here's with an E, Shoutable. Shoutable. You can probably hear the subtle differences. And I hope that's stuck in your head now, Shoutable.com. And it is still in development. Head over there, check it out. There are some great blogs up to sort of read about the development and what it's all about. But I talked to Travis about this great site, which looks to resolve some problems that independent artists have. Specifically, where do I put my stuff? So working online and designing your own website, where do I meet other musicians? There's a social aspect to it, which will allow people to find other artists. And where can I sell my stuff, which is an e-commerce part, which will also be worked into it. And I'll just let Travis explain the rest. Here is my conversation with Travis Morrison of Shoutable here on Radio Dale. I usually just sort of do this conversationally, so it'll probably be a bit less interview, more just chatting about Shoutable and sort of what you do. So I don't know if there was anywhere in particular you wanted to start, if you wanted to talk a bit about your band or what took you from Huffington Post? You worked at the Huffington Post first, right?
Yeah, I worked at Huffington Post. That was my last job.
Your last job, okay. And then you left from there to get in. Were you involved with Shoutable and building it beforehand, or did you move into that afterwards?
I moved there into it afterwards.
Okay, interesting. And what was the spark? What did you just feel there was a hole in the music industry, or what sparked Shoutable?
I had finished jacking a WordPress instance for the Dismemberment Plan's website, mm-hmm. what I wanted. And it took 2 months, and it was maddening. And at the end, I realized I had to do it all over again for TravisMorrison.com.
Hmm.
And that made me very upset. And I thought, why is there no service that would enable me to do that in 10 minutes and hook the two of them up
yeah.
so that repeated content can appear in both? I like to call those moments the sharks with lasers moment. You know, throw me a bone here, people.
Yeah.
Why can't sharks with lasers? All I want is sharks with lasers. That was my shark with lasers. Was I wanted that service, and no one had it. No one had anything even close. And then at that time, Travis Donovan, who I also knew from Huffington Post, contacted me and said he wanted to work on something related to music and talk about the frustrations of how bands manage their content on the web.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, it was just an excellent moment for the both of us to go for it.
Was sort of the general idea to find a way to take all the obstacles that musicians have and try to find a way to sort of smooth them over, at least give people a fighting chance to pull everything together and work online?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very hard to find other musicians. I think it's hard to network as a musician. There's no LinkedIn. Bands can't be on LinkedIn, but mm-hmm. we need a LinkedIn. It wouldn't look anything like LinkedIn, but it would be like LinkedIn.
Yeah.
That you can go to it and search it and find someone to play a show with in Detroit between this date and this date. It's very frustrating that that doesn't exist, and it doesn't exist because there isn't a common platform for everyone to be hosting their content on. If that platform existed, then the content that they naturally produce would be the fodder mm-hmm. for a rich, searchable network that artists could use to find new opportunities. Because artists help artists. That's the number one thing that artists need. More than a label, more than fans, more than money, artists need other artists. And people who work at labels, people who work at management, people who book, they will tell you that. They will say, you need other artists. You need a scene. You need people who have your back and you have their back, and you play shows together and you make a collective name for yourselves, either lasting or ephemeral. Ephemeral, I don't know how to say that word right.
Yeah.
And that platform simply does not exist at all. There's nothing even close to it.
No, I agree. And you're a musician yourself, so you can sort of tell from the ground floor, as well as, I guess, as an entrepreneur, the pieces that need to go together to make this work.
Yes, I think I'm in a good position.
Now, the spark that you were originally talking about had to do with web design, but there are more parts to Shoutable, including this sort of almost social networking element. Can you talk a bit about that, how it works?
Sure. Basically, it's a searchable network. It's already a network because lots of people are using the same service. Anytime there's a bunch of people using the same service, it's a network.
Mm-hmm.
Bandcamp is a network. They just don't make that much of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Occasionally they try, but it's not that prominent. It's more an application. It's a service.
Mm-hmm.
But anytime more than one person uses some service, it's a potential network, even if it's two people. So there's search elements that enable you to search the Shoutable network with city or band name or tag. And there's also news feeds from other artists that you follow that are artists that you have an affiliation with that you'd like to follow.
Mm-hmm.
You can be Facebook friends with other artist friends of yours, but A, you're your feed is swamped by baby pictures and BuzzFeed links, and the signal-to-noise ratio for someone involved in the art is not high on a network like Facebook. And you also don't have visibility into the connections on Facebook in regards to the art. On LinkedIn, it's crystal clear about how you work with this person who worked with that person who worked with that person at the place where you want a job.
Yeah.
But Facebook, Twitter, none of these social networks help you at all with that kind of thing. And it's not that hard to do. You just take what everyone's naturally doing anyways that they would put on their website if they were able to easily set up a website and repurpose that into the network. And so I would I already have on Shoutable in the back end with a private beta, I have a feed of bands I follow, and they're just friends of mine. And it's great. It's already great. It's already awesome. I use it now. Like, I have a feed where I see where my friends in Typefighter are playing shows up here in Brooklyn on Thursday. Everyone's always interested in the bands that their friends are in. Everyone's always interested in the bands that are friends of the bands that their friends are in too.
Yeah.
Of course. That's a big thing. The bands that are friends, the bands that your friends are in, that's a band you're interested in.
Yeah, totally.
That always happens. So again, it's very much like LinkedIn in that it's that kind of professional network. And using the word professional is tricky because this is also art. It's also social.
Right? Yeah, totally.
Just go ahead and do it. It's professional. And it's based on those kinds of degrees of connection. And we believe that that's just a massive missing point with virtually every web music service that's out there, from Spotify to Facebook to Twitter, to Bandcamp to, I don't know, Bandzoogle. Just no one's doing this.
No, totally. I've heard of people sort of trying to tackle it before, and I'm talking like 8-9 years ago, just a way for bands to sort of communicate together in one central network. And it always seems to fall apart because there's never any other reason to pull them in. It was just this almost like a forum where, yeah you sound like you sort of have not only this cool front end, which has website and e-commerce where people can sell their stuff, but essentially like a back end where artists can socialize and network with each other.
That's far more preferable. Not preferable. That's far more important to me right now than the commerce part, which will come. But far more important to me is the social professional network made up by the vast Venn diagram of artists. Because it really is a vast Venn diagram. I don't know. The connection for me to Arcade Fire would be Eric Axelson of the Dismemberment Plan played in Maritime. Maritime had a tour or two with the drummer of Arcade Fire, who at that time was not in the Arcade Fire, but he played keyboards for Maritime. So for me, on a broad level, it goes Dismemberment Plan, Maritime via Eric, and then via, I think his name is Tim Guerra, I can't quite remember. Via him, Arcade Fire. It's only two connections.
It's like Kevin Bacon, only probably tighter. Yeah.
Right. I don't know Arcade Fire. I'm not going to like email them right now, like, what's up, bros? No. But to illustrate the vast Venn diagram of the arts, that's how it works. And it's shocking how close you are to people sometimes. Consider, here's a good example I like to use in the history of rock. Consider Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. And I like the example because their names are in the name. Neil Young and Stephen Stills played in Buffalo Springfield. And then Neil Young was also in Crazy Horse. Never mind all these dudes' solo careers.
Yeah.
And then Graham Nash was in the Hollies. And David Crosby was in the Birds. I think he's in the Birds.
Yeah.
I'd have just showed my slip in terms of music. I almost want to say, yes, he was in the Birds. So these, I mean, not to mention the dudes in Buffalo Springfield, who I believe went on to be in Flying Burrito Brothers.
Yeah.
I mean, this is rock and roll nerd stuff, right? But this was the reality of it. And there was no Shoutable around at the time for them all to sign in and be connected.
It was just a natural network.
It was. Yeah. It was. It's a natural network. And I actually think that there's been a loss of these gravitational centers that did exist when I was a young pup. Mm-hmm. And I don't like to make much about the things that have been lost in the culture, because I think we've gained things too, and I think it's a very exciting time. But the loss of record stores mm-hmm. has meant a loss of places for people to find each other. You started talking to the person behind the counter, mm-hmm. you're usually a board, and if you went to that record store, you'd be pretty interested in what was posted on the board, because it was an indie rock record store. There wouldn't be flyers for metal bands.
Yeah.
And that doesn't exist anymore, and the internet hasn't really replaced it.
It's almost too vast.
Well, I mean,
so many places you can post things, and so many distractions between, like, stuff signal in the air between where you posted it and people trying to find it, that it seems like a lot gets lost.
Yeah, I mean, what do you? I mean, if you Google Brooklyn guitarist,
yeah.
You're going to get some weird shit that's not going to help you. We want a place where if you type in Brooklyn guitarist into search, you might make four new interesting contacts for whatever mm-hmm. you're doing.
Very cool. And I like the quote from the Mashable article that I'm not going to promise to make anybody rich, but I can get people, I can get to a place where Ben can make 20 to 40 bucks a day selling hoodies. It's like such a, I don't know, it's like a realistic approach to life, because everything happens so slowly in the industry, but so many people have such a hard time starting.
I am much more interested in the bootstrap time of any band.
Yeah.
I don't believe it ever fully stops. It really has, the dismemberment plan, as far as I'm concerned, is still a startup.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
We still have to operate on a lean basis. We still have to watch our pennies. We still have to prioritize.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that will ever change. I don't think we will ever be a large, wasteful corporation with 5 employees. I don't think it'll ever be on that kind of scale. The dismemberment plan will never scale, as they like to say in industries.
Yeah.
So, since we'll never scale, and since most rock and bands never scale like that, and it's always an artisanal gesture and a social gesture, where is the service that empowers you to do the things you need to do? To sell a hoodie and a t-shirt every day.
Yeah.
And more importantly, make the connections you need to other artists to help you do that. It's so important if you ever want fans to have artist friends, because fans love scenes. Fans love who you know, who you make music with, who you play shows with.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I'm a rock and roll fan and I love it. So if I love it, I know a lot of other people love it.
Mm-hmm. At the moment, Shoutable is, I guess, in a beta, whatever moment, you want to call it.
The moment, Shoutable is ugly. Yeah, we have about 50 test sites, about 150 users right now. It's growing. Of course, cool. We want to grow exponentially, but of course, any exponential curve at first is very slow.
Yeah.
So we're in that moment. But I can say it's growing exponentially from 1 to 2 to 4 to 8. But as long as I see that exponential growth, even at a small scale, that makes me feel good. And we're just working as hard as we can to have something that we feel comfortable showing to people farther and farther away from us until eventually people can just sign in and use it. And then we have a real product out there.
Cool. So are you not going to slap a date on launch? You're just going to go nice and gently until it naturally falls into place?
I think so. I think it will be a foggy timeline where one day we don't even realize we're public, and we are.
Yeah.
We're so comfortable. It's kind of like the day that a parent realizes they're not checking where their teenage kid is going with the car. The day that the kid says, "Hey, can I have the car?" They go, "Yeah, sure." And then they look at the window, they're like, "Where are they going? And why did I not care? That I think is how it will go. I mean, we've only been at it for 10 months. Mm-hmm. And so we're feeling pretty on schedule, and it's a very complicated mission. I don't know if you've ever heard that phrase, feature, not a website, which is an insult that people use when a web thing really is not a good standalone service, but really just should have been part of another service.
Another service, totally. Like Twitter Music, a lot of people say.
Right. Yeah. I tell you what, the one thing I tell myself every day when I have frustrating days is that this is not that.
Yeah.
This is pretty ambitious. This is pretty big. And we've had some false starts. But, you know, you just, like making a record, you just get up every day and try to make it a little better until the day you say, I can play this for other people. And hopefully that day will come soon. And I think it will. It won't be another year. It won't be another 6 months. Mm-hmm. If I had to guess, and this is how you jinx yourself, I think by the end of this year, early winter, the beta will start opening up. Like, we'll really start inviting people as beta users, and beta users would be more free to just invite other people that we don't know or can't track.
Yeah.
We might not get to that place where we're just letting whoever sign up. It will probably be on an invite basis so we can slam the brakes again if we see strange things happening.
Yeah.
But I would say that by the end of the year, I think we'll be in a place where it's public beta, not private beta. Public invite beta, not private beta.
Gotcha. All right. Is there anything else you'd like to say to independent artists or anybody interested in the music industry as a whole?
Stop being interested in the music industry and get interested in music as an art and as a opportunity for social excitement. That's what I would give any advice for anyone who's interested in the music industry. That's, I don't know what the hell is wrong with you if you care about that.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
All right.
And that has been Radio Dale number 47. My name is Rue.
I'm India.
And I'm Amber.
You can find Dale Speaking online at DaleSpeaking.com, Twitter, Dale_Speaking on Facebook, Dale Speaking. We have our blogs and our podcasts online for you to listen to. And anything else to add before we go away?
Try saying shoutable without the E at the end.
Try saying it without the E. It's hard. Say it, Amber.
Shoutable.
Very good. India?
Shoutable.
That was with an E and three accents.
That was too French.
Shoutable. Shoutable.
Oh, God.
And they'll never talk to us again. I guess that's good.
Yep.
Yay.
Bye.
Oh.
Bye.
Bye.
By the way, what's with the toilet paper?
What's wrong with it?
It's yucky. But no one else noticed it.
Have you not?
No.
Nothing bad happened.
I was like, ew.
No.
It's used?
It's like, it's just
recycled?
Yeah, somebody used it.